U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on this Friday afternoon. We're going to be talking about a legal way to steal cars, probably a better way to tell that story, and also talking about whether political signs really make a difference. That's what's coming up in the next 60 minutes, brought to you in part by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. We're going to start things off right where I talked about Andrea Haynes. We're talking about cars to go, which of course is not stealing cars. But man, you get to pick it up in a certain spot, drive it around, leave it wherever the heck you want to a certain degree, and just pay like $15, $17. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it's like super flexible car rental, right? Like kind of Divvy style. Yeah, so you rent the car and then you can take it where you need to go and leave it there versus having to check it back in someplace.
So it tells you where you're supposed to pick up a certain car. Does it like search the area for where the latest car was dropped off?
Yeah, it gives you kind of that supreme flexibility.
And it's doing pretty well in Chicago, right?
It is. So the pilot started in July and they've already got 10,000 people signed up to use it. There's about 500 cars that are being swapped around the city within certain limits. And interestingly, as we were talking about, some neighborhoods aren't allowing it yet because they don't have enough space for you to drop the car off.
Right. It's not like you can just drop it in the middle of a street. So many streets have meters, and the meters aren't even run by the city. And then, of course, a lot of, like, mine block, you can't park anywhere without a permit between 6 p.m., 6 a.m. Some places are 24-hour permit parkings. How do they plan on navigating it, or is it touch and go as they figure this out?
Yeah, it's a little touch and go in neighborhoods like Lincoln Park and Lakeview, where they've been a little more hesitant because, you know, A, it'll be tough for you as a driver, especially if you're in a less familiar neighborhood. Where do you put the thing, right? And I would assume for residents who live there, they might not want to be inundated with lots of cars that have no place to go. But overall, it sounds like it's hitting the mark for people.
It's interesting. And I imagine that, you know, in this ride sharing economy, some people would say, oh, just take an Uber, but that can, you know, each way can cost more. And there's Zipcar, of course, but there's a downside to Zipcar where you actually have to go to specific spots, right?
Yeah. And this is definitely kind of slicing the pie just a slightly different way, right? There's all kinds of different ways to do this now. But for your Target run, you know, you can grab a smart car. You know, it's just yet one more option to give us ways that we maybe don't have to own a car anymore.
It's interesting because the price point is pretty good, under $20 for an hour on some of these vehicles. Some people might say, well, that's a lot of money to spend to go get groceries. But when you break down how much it costs to own a car, the insurance, the parking costs you might pay, that might be something that balances the ledger fine for someone.
Yeah. And interestingly, people are using it a lot on weekends. They're not necessarily using it for commuting and that kind of thing. They're using it for weekend trips.
Running those errands to Target because you go for a red pepper and you end up with a Roomba. Let's talk about Saudi Arabia. Obviously, it's made big news here internationally. But in a much more business sense, there's a lot of Saudi money all over the place, especially in Silicon Valley.
There is. So, you know, Davos in the desert pretty much fell apart, the big business kind of thing that was going to be happening. But specifically with tech, there has been so much investment in Silicon Valley that now that world is going to have to kind of navigate that and figure out where it stands on this.
How public are investor dollars or where they come from? For example, can I, as a consumer, if I was really interested in the international scene and wanted to make my consumer choices based on where money was coming from, is it easy to look up or is it kind of cloudy?
Yeah, you can find some of that. You know, a lot of it is stuff that, like, it's Lyft, it's Uber, it's things like that. There are other emerging companies like Magic Leap, things that you might not be using yet anyway. But there's billions of dollars basically flowing into all kinds of areas.
Do you think it's up to the companies that they're going to have to make their own decisions, or is it going to be a consumer driven thing?
Yeah, I kind of doubt it will be consumer driven. I just don't know that people are going to necessarily go to that. You know, I mean, you always have your people that are going to boycott cosmetics if they do animal testing,
right?
Or you know, and that is growing. I do think people care about that. But whether people are going to be able to drill down and avoid companies based on Saudi investment, I think is maybe a bridge too far to expect of the consumer. I think the companies will probably have to deal with it directly.
And of course, if you're talking about companies dealing with it, when you're talking about multiple billions of dollars, that's not an easy decision to make. I know we love to make things so black and white. What they may have done internationally should affect how we run our business, but it's not that easy.
And it's a little bit diluted. It's one thing if it's like, do I want to fly to Saudi Arabia and give them my money? That's one question. If it's like they're investing in a venture fund that then invests in something else, you know, it becomes a little bit harder to track and follow that, even if you are motivated to, you know, to protest.
Right. Andrea Hannes, we've been talking about stories, and you guys have a lot of stories that are talkers, but there's one story in particular that is so visual. Tell us about this piece that came out that really details an interesting part of real estate here right near our studio.
Yeah, so I'm almost looking at it right now at the window here. It's that area that I sort of define loosely as sort of east of Michigan Avenue, you know, toward Navy Pier. So that area was empty a couple decades ago. It's built up a lot. And Blair Kamen, who's the Pulitzer Prize-winning architecture critic at the Tribune, has done this really innovative piece on, you know, tracking the growth there, how it has grown, but on the other hand, some things that have not come to pass that would make a better experience for Chicagoans and visitors in terms of the plazas and how walkable it is. And it's an amazing piece of digital journalism, thanks to our graphics team. And I would highly recommend looking at it. Just as a citizen, as a visitor, it's fascinating.
And where can people find that story and plenty
others? That's at chicagotribune.com.
Andrea, have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you, John. Great to see you.
720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Friday afternoon. You're down the stretch. You're almost to the weekend. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand. And I don't know about you guys, but when I make my choice here at the midterm elections, I'm not going to pay attention to any of the clutter out there, any of the noise. I'm just going to walk to my polling place, and the last sign that I see, I'm going to pick that person and pull that lever. Of course, I'm joking, and I don't think most people do that, but here to let us know for sure is a reporter of the Chicago Tribune, Kate Thayer. We're going to talk about political science. Kate, thanks for joining us here on the Winter's Business Lunch.
No problem. Good to be here.
All right. So obviously I laid out an exaggerated situation, but I was just driving through the western suburbs this morning, saw a lot of political signs out there, and I had this question about do political signs work? And what does the research, if there is much, tell us, Kate?
Well, there isn't a ton of research out there, but there is a group of political science professors who did some work on this a couple years ago in the New York area, and they found that, you know, it's kind of a nuanced answer, but political signs do work a little bit, but not in the way you might think they work. They propose that perhaps more people would vote and voter turnout would be higher in areas where there's more signs in lawns and such, but that's not what they found. That did not happen. They did find that sometimes a candidate will get more votes in an area where they've blanketed the area with signs versus an area where they have not done that. So that's basically what they told me.
Well, we're about as polarized as ever, so a few votes and percentages can matter. In terms of expenses, I imagine a political sign, while it does add costs and a nuisance, it's cheaper than a TV commercial.
Sure, yeah. I mean, especially in our area where ad time is quite expensive in the Chicago market. So the professor I was talking to said, you know, he'd put his money on signs because even though it doesn't have a huge impact, there is that slight impact. And although it is expensive, you know, it's not as expensive as some things.
Kate, let's talk about the psychology behind it. I assume you're not a psychologist, neither am I. But if I'm just thinking of human behavior, I imagine, one, it's like name recognition, especially for like judges or small races where you're maybe not as in tune as you should be. So it's a name recognition. But I don't know if it's maybe collective experience isn't the right word. But if you see a bunch of them, I don't know if it's like subliminal or it just makes it seem like a campaign has its act together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and, you know, that's what this expert told me, that, you know, there's not a lot that can tell you that a campaign is active and working and they have support, and a sign is a physical, tangible thing that's sitting right in front of you that can give the appearance that, hey, people are supporting this person, this campaign is active, and, you know, it possibly get more people to support them because of that. And then, of course, name recognition, as you say.
Right. I imagine that it's a nuisance for, because, I mean, there's thoughts of, you know, people stealing signs or where you're supposed to put them and not. If you had to enforce every sign in the city, you'd be wasting all your resources. So I imagine candidates, you know, this is something that has skyrocketed. I always thought that, you know, political signs were around forever, but I read a study that they've really skyrocketed in the last 30 years. So, Kate, if you had to guess, are signs going anywhere?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, that's always going to be something people do and, you know, a way that they can show their support. Not everyone can get involved in the political process. And I think in these times, everyone's really into it, right? So I think that's one little thing you can do to show your support, which I think is something people are more apt to do these days. So I don't think they're going anywhere.
Kate, I got to thank you so much for joining us here in 720. I appreciate your time and have a great weekend, okay?
You too. Thank you.
All right. I got to tell you all that I'm not going to name names, but my neighbors have a little war going on between signs. Who can have the most of them? Who has the bigger one? And it's going on right now in the western suburbs. I'll leave it just at that. Won't name names. 720 WGN. Happy Friday afternoon, everyone. 12:38. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. John Hansen here until 1 o'clock. I got a special treat for you. Pete McMurray and Jay Manzura is in the house. I see them prepping for the show right now through the window. Two of the best people out there, and they're going to have an awesome show, I bet, at 1 o'clock. October is a National Disability Employment Awareness Month, and in honor of that, the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce's foundation, the Chicagoland Business Leadership Network, is hosting the 4th Annual Disability Inclusion Opportunity Summit. It may not be something you've heard about, but if you're interested in business in any stretch of the imagination, if you're listening to the show, I assume you are, it's definitely something that you should take heed of and pay attention to. And joining us to chat about it is the President and CEO of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Jack Lavin. And Jack, when we talk about people in our population with disabilities, they really are an untapped and talented resource pool, aren't they?
They sure are, John, and thanks for having me on today to talk about this important topic. And as you said, this is our 4th annual Disability Inclusion Opportunity Summit. And really, you know, about 23% of Chicagoans have a disability, and it's a largely untapped pool of talent. You know, when we survey our members of the Chicagoland Chamber and survey businesses around the region, talent is the number one issue. Retaining talent, finding talent, and the population of people that have disabilities are a largely untapped pool of talent. Yet there's a business case that can be made, that it is made for employing people with disabilities, and it will improve your bottom line.
Jack, is it the stigma of a disability? Is it that employers feel like they're taking on an extra weight, and unfairly so, that they're thinking that? Is that why this remains an untapped pool of talent?
John, that's a great question, and you are absolutely correct. I call them false worries. You know, what are the cost of accommodations, competency, regulations? But the fact and the research shows, facts and research show, there's a lower absentee rate. There's a better safety record. There's a higher there's higher retention rates and lower turnovers. People with disabilities meet or exceed productivity levels. These are studies that have been done by UPS, Walgreens, Healthcare Service Corporation, Blue Cross Blue Shield, who's hosting the summit today. All these things can improve your bottom line. So the business case can be made. You can lower your costs. You can overcome these false worries, because they aren't really worries that should be had. And that's the whole purpose of this summit today, of disability in Chicago. It used to be called the Chicago Business Leadership Network. We've now changed our name to Disability in Chicago. The whole idea is to have peer-to-peer, business-to-business networking to talk about these false worries. So companies like Northern Trust, Walgreens, KPMG, who are hiring people with disabilities and understand the benefits and also some of the challenges, can talk peer-to-peer and business-to-business, so that other businesses can understand this may be a challenge, but the benefit is much greater. People with disabilities think about things in different ways, so it brings a new innovative thinking.
Right.
And as I said, you know, higher retention rates, lower turnover. All these benefits outweigh maybe some of the initial challenges that may be there.
You know, I've been a proponent, I think a lot of people have in the business world, of diversity in the workplace. I think we found that not only is it the morally and ethically right thing to do, you sort of touched on it. It helps the bottom line. It brings people in with different ideas, different walks of life, different experiences that they've had, and they can help guide your product, your services, to cater to a larger audience pool.
Absolutely. In today's age, you have to be innovative to be successful. And to be innovative, you have to tap this untapped pool of talent who brings new ways of thinking to this. And it can't be, John, just thinking this is the right thing to do, it's the moral thing to do. It is, absolutely. But to really make a change, you got to make the business case, and the business case is there. And if you can show companies, you'll lower your bottom line, your workers will be more productive, that's when the significant change will happen. And that's part of what Disability in Chicago is, peer-to-peer, business-to-business. Talk to companies about all the benefits that are there when you hire people with disabilities. You know, companies like Allstate, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Boeing, Deloitte, Exelon, Ernst & Young, Grant Thornton. These are all members of Disability in Chicago, KPMG, Let Us Entertain You, and they're doing it. But they need to share best practices with other companies that, as you said, worry about some of these false worries, the cost of accommodations and what happens. So that's what the summit is. That's what Disability in Chicago is. I was really, a couple months ago, one of our company's members of the chamber called The Knee was doing an event with Special Olympics, part of the 50th anniversary. And the owner of The Knee suddenly saw these Special Olympians selling some of her product at the event. And she said, I got to hire these people because they have smiles on their face. They're talking to people. They're selling my product. This is good for business. That's what we got to do. We got to spread the word. And that's what Disability in Chicagoland is all about. And that's what this summit's all about today. Hey, over 250 people here.
Yeah. And it's going on right now until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. Jack, I want to ask, because you mentioned it's the fourth year, and throughout the past 4 years, we've had improving economic conditions. We've had a lower unemployment rate and more job openings. I guess my question for you, Jack, is how do you overcome this challenge where, you know, in this business market, obviously, a lot of businesses need workers, whether they're temporary, whether they're full-time. So maybe that forces people to look in different directions where they hadn't looked before, and that's a good thing. But how do you send that message to businesses that, well, it is a good thing now, currently, when there are a lot of openings and retention is sometimes tough, that it also still makes sense fiscally for the bottom line, even when these numbers might tighten in the future, that these are still people to employ. They are not expendable just because the employment outlook means that we need more employees now. Does that make sense, my question?
No, yeah, John, that's a great question. And I think what we have an opportunity now where we do, companies do need workers, but once they're in and they see the business case can be made, and it's not just a moral thing to do, because it is the right moral thing to do, but there's also a business case. So once you get them peer-to-peer and talking to businesses, business-to-business, and get them to hire this untapped talent pool of people with disabilities, then they see the benefit and they see the innovation that's brought. They see the higher productivity and the higher retention rates, and all that's a good thing. And I think the other thing, John, that's happening is younger people in the workforce grow up with people with disabilities, and they're in their classroom. I have a daughter who's 22 years old. She has Down syndrome. And she was fully included all through school. And she just turned 22. She's out of the school system. She's working a couple internships as a teacher's aide and a school aide. But the whole way through, her classmates just saw her as just another student in the class. She was just part of the class, part of the group. And so now when they're in the workplace and they're hiring people, they're more likely to say, yeah, I see the benefit of hiring that person with a disability. So I think times are changing. We still need to spread the word. We still need to educate people. We still need business talking to business to make the business case why it's good to hire people with disabilities and utilize this really untapped talent pool that will bring new and innovative ways of thinking to your business.
The summit goes till 3:30 p.m. You can visit the website chicagolandchamber.org, and I'm sure you'll have a video available for people to see about it. Jack, we're out of time, but thanks so much for stopping by and sharing us what you guys are doing, okay?
Yeah, and if your listeners want more information, at chicagolandbln.org. Visit our website. We want to spread the word, and thank you for having me on, John.
Absolutely, Jack. We appreciate it. Quick commercial break, then more here on 720 WG and the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hey, want to sneak into some really cool offices?
Oh, that's trespassing? Oh, okay. Well, then thankfully Cranes did it for us, and they listed their 2018 coolest offices in the city. There were 11 winners this year, with the interior design firm Gary Lee Partners taking the top spot. These were all highly renovated office spaces with a mix of vintage and a little bit of modern vibes, so check them all out at chicagobusiness.com. And speaking of vintage, though Sears may be just about gone, their digital footprint may not be. Along with many of their physical locations, the annual Wish Books many remember will not be republished for customers in the future. And sadly, it also may not be worth it to hold on to older versions of those as well, you know, stuffed in the box in the attic. Because, let's be honest, you might have thought that that was your punch ticket to retirement. They're currently going for about $30 to $40 on eBay and other sites. So, you're better off just keeping them and remembering how much you wanted an easy bake oven, because who doesn't want brownies made from a light bulb? I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
720 WGN. So don't bring any severed pig's heads into the country. Orion's always on top of that stuff. Great story. And a great picture with that story as well of that beagle. Okay, if you're looking for a gig or know someone that is, the folks at Challenger Gray and Christmas, they always help out with the transition to reemployment for displaced workers. And really, it could be a great holiday season for folks if you are looking for a job or maybe a second or a third one. Andy Challenger, you're the VP over there. Andy, thanks for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Andy, we love that you guys are based here out of Chicago, helping people out for so many years. And these announcements this year from Amazon, from other companies, the need is at a record high.
Yeah, we're anticipating a huge need from retailers coming into the fourth quarter. We're in the longest expansion in American history. The economy is doing well. It means consumers have more money in their pockets this holiday season, and these big box retailers are expecting that more of that money is going to be spent in their stores, and that they're going to need extra workers to keep up with demand.
Obviously, more money is good. You know, we are spending more, hopefully, this holiday season. That's good for the economy. But with so many, with the unemployment number so low, and so many people, more people, I say, satisfied in their employment, does that make it much harder for these companies to find capable workers?
It really is. We're seeing a record number of new hires that these retailers want to make, but they're making, they want to make these hires in the tightest labor market we've seen since 1969. So it's going to be a very difficult time, and we are anticipating, in some ways, a war for talent among these retailers to get the labor they need to deliver this holiday season.
Amazon has a big need for talent. They're looking for 100,000 seasonal workers, but their new minimum wage might help gather some of that talent, right?
Yeah, so that's one of the big changes we've seen this holiday season. We saw a couple stores, JCPenney's and Kohl's, started doing their holiday hiring as early as July this year. So, trying to kind of get out ahead of the pack. And then the big change we saw was a couple weeks ago, Amazon announced $15 an hour minimum wage. That's going to make an enormous push for all retailers. It's going to make it a very competitive market. It's going to make it difficult for some of these other retailers to raise wages quick enough to compete for labor with Amazon.
Andy, last question really quickly. If someone is out of a job or they're looking for seasonal work, I guess they can shop around a little bit.
Yeah, it's an area where we see a lot of turnover. If you are looking for extra work, you didn't find something in September, go back to those stores again in October and November. Oftentimes those roles open back up, and we know that these retailers are in desperate need for people this season.
Andy Challenger, VP at Challenger Gray and Christmas, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.